Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT, Three Guys Theologizing. We are so glad you joined us today for what I hope to be a lively and fun discussion, and it has become more and more uncommon for there to be a true 3GT episode where Barry and Kyle and I get together and talk. But today is one of those days. I am joined with co-host Kyle Borg, who is out in Winchester, Kansas, probably one of the safest cities in the world. Is that right, yes. Kyle?
Why would, you know, it is. So to my knowledge, only two murders have happened within the city limits. One was in 1980 and the other one was in the 1870s. So
a pretty safe, safe area. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you've joined us today.
And thank you.
And we're here with President Barry York, professor, ruling elder, extraordinaire. Barry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
I was trying to figure out all the good things I could say about Barry, and my mind went blank.
Because there's too much or there's too little?
What I'm going to say, I'm going to stick with my answer. My mind went blank.
Fair enough.
I was still Barry, trying to do the math on the per capita murder rate of Winchester, and it could be actually a dangerous place if you do per capita.
Yeah, we should not have drawn a math major into this discussion, because that's immediately where his mind would go.
I assume you're doing well then, Barry.
Yes, I am doing well. Thank you.
Good. I can, you are in your t-shirt, so you are obviously not going into the office and teaching classes. You enjoying your summer? Do you have a break from teaching?
I'm on a study break right now, so I'm doing some writing. I did go in one day this week. We have the Theological Foundations for Youth program at the seminary where they, I call it the Holy Hurricane, where we have these young people come in for a week, study, 35 living in the building and studying, all this activity going on. And then they go out into churches for a week. So we get the calm of the storm. And then they come back the third week and do some more study with us. So it's a hopping place right now. So I was down there one day this week teaching, but all in all, I'm sticking here, typing on the keyboard.
Very nice. And Kyle, do I understand you got to go to Lake Tahoe?
I did.
Recently.
So I was invited. How was that? It was amazing. So I was invited to be the speaker of the Pacific Coast Presbytery Family Camp, which they met at a place on the Nevada side of Lake Tahoe. It was one of the most ideal places. It was a great family camp all around, from location to the people. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Lake Tahoe, but it is beautiful. So
no, I haven't.
You know, there is rumors of a lake monster, not named Nessie, but named Tessie. Lake Tahoe is the second deepest lake in North America, from my understanding, at 1,600 feet. And Tessie swims the depths. So that's really all I did in my free time was look for Tessie.
Didn't find Tessie?
I did not.
No sightings. I think Kyle has some other interesting news as well, Scott.
There's rumblings, I think. Do you have anything else, Kyle, that's exciting happening in your life?
Well, my life is always exciting.
Yes, I know, but
especially exciting. I'm at the age of 40, my mind is slipping. I am not mentally with it as much as I was before. And so Rachel and I are expecting our sixth child. So we just publicly announced that yesterday as of the day of this recording. So the Lord has blessed us with a sixth due in February. Technically, the due date is February 26th. I'm really encouraging Rachel to hold on to February 29th. And that way we can have a leap day baby. The kids think it would be hilarious if this kid only celebrated a birthday once every 4 years. So that is the hope.
It would save you on buying presents, right?
It would save us buying presents. It would save, you know, kids don't need a birthday every year. It teaches them to be self-centered and self-congratulatory. And I think it could be a really sanctifying moment for our child.
Well, congratulations, Kyle.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We're excited.
Yes. Well, I don't know exactly how to segue into our topic today. So I'm just going to
God,
jump right
in. Is it on cryptozoology and the intersection with the Christian faith? You know, like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, is that what we're talking about? Nope.
I'm probably as ready to talk about that as anything else, Kyle. I'll be honest with you.
Perfect. Perfect. I leave you to it. I'm only the co-host today. Take it away.
Well, we're going to be talking about something I think we all three have some experience with, maybe not. But we had a listener, and we do appreciate this, not making light of this. We had a listener suggest that we talk about this topic, and that topic is wealth. And how should Christians view wealth? And then I think later on, we'll talk about how should we communicate these like wealth and money to our children. And so I want to get into that, but later on, I think what's important for us and for listeners is to get kind of an understanding of what wealth is. How do we define wealth? How are we to view wealth? And you know, from a Christian perspective, obviously, what are the pitfalls of wealth? What are the blessings of wealth? So let's just, I just want to kick it off with, how would you define wealth? And I guess it's hard to define wealth without also defining poverty or being poor. So give me some of your thoughts on how do we define that first of all?
Well, I think it's important to, when we think about this, it is important that even biblically speaking, wealth and poverty are relative terms. There is no evidence given in the Bible, I would say, that draws a hard and fast line in the sand that says, well, if you're on this side of the line, you are impoverished. But if you are on this side of the line, then you are wealthy. There is a little bit of relativity to this, dependent on place both geographically, but place in history and time as well. When I deal with this issue as a pastor, and it's something that has to be dealt with because the Bible speaks very much to these issues, you know, I try to remind my congregation that relative as it is, you know, we need to remember that as American Christians, if you're an American, you are at least historically speaking, and when in comparison to the rest of living humanity, we really do fall on the wealthy side of things. You know, not to just pull on statistics, because how much can you trust them? But when you come to deal with the issue of wealth in our modern world, Americans on the whole are, you know, we don't even need to speak in terms of the 1%, but the 1/10 of the 1%. We are, statistically speaking, the average American is 99.8% more well off than the rest of the world, whether that's measured in possessions, in money, in property, whatever it is. So that even though it's a relative term, and we need to appreciate that dependent on context, broadly speaking, most of us are in the tier of wealthy people when we think about it. I don't think we do a huge service when we come to the Bible and think in wealth only in the way of like, well, Jeff Bezos is wealthy, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is wealthy, that while there's not a hard and fast line created by the Bible, I think it's pretty apparent if we're honest with ourselves that most of us abound in material possessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what Kyle's saying is really true, that there is a certain amount of relativity to wealth's measure when you think of wealth being the acquisition and possession of resources. It depends on a situation how helpful those particular resources can be. I could have $1 million in a suitcase, but if I'm stranded on a desert island, it's not going to do me anything. All of a sudden, I become poor. So you do have to measure it in terms of where you're located, how valuable those resources that you have are seen within the context of where you are. So I do think that that's really important to keep in mind. I think the scriptures, you know, just thinking about this theologically a bit, I think especially as we look at the 8th and the 10th commandment, We're told not to steal. And if we look at how that commandment's been developed theologically over time, and particularly in certain historical settings and confessional writings, we would be those who would really believe in the value of private possession or ownership. And so you could be in a country where there's a lot of resources available, but because you're in a communist nation, for instance, a lot of that isn't accessible to you, or it's controlled by other people. So when we're talking about wealth, we have to think about also just the freedom of ownership. You know, we aren't to violate the 10th commandment on coveting, that we are to acknowledge that God has given resources to different people at different amounts and levels. And I think it's really important for us as Christians to show a certain contentedness in the material state that God puts us at in any given time. If we're in a, you know, Western society that's more free in nature, we often have abilities to acquire more wealth if we work hard, but that's not always, again, the case, depending on where you're located. So I think those are things you have to keep in mind. Another thing I just always think about when it comes to the subject of talking about riches and poverty and all that is, as it says in the Proverbs, the rich and poor have this in common: the Lord is the maker of them all. So as we start considering this topic of wealth and how we're to use it and how we're to look at other people with respect to it, we always have to keep that in mind, that God has made the rich man, God has made the poor man, he's the maker of them all. And we need to use whatever resources the Lord has given to us in a way that we take care of the responsibilities we have, but also then have to in turn think about how we can use these resources for the benefit of others around us.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I appreciate all of that. And I might just add too, in thinking biblically about this, again, a hard and fast line is hard to determine. But it is interesting that the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 6:8, Paul is writing and he says, you know, contentment, godliness with contentment is great gain. And he says, we brought nothing into the world and we cannot take anything out of the world. And then in 1 Timothy 6:8, he says, but if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation. So it's interesting, without getting into all the details, you know, it is interesting. The baseline for Paul kind of is, you know, contentment is found if we have food and clothing. And then the warning comes, those who desire to be rich fall into many temptations, as if beyond that, that level of contentment begins in one sense to put you then into a maybe a position of more wealth, more things like that. So,
yeah. And I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, when we try to draw hard and fast lines where they don't exist, we end up getting in trouble. And I think if you'd ask most people, they would say, well, the wealthy are just a little bit more or more than I have. I'm not in that wealthy. And I do think it lends to even a discussion of wealth and poverty can lend itself to a 10th commandment violation, where you start to covet what others have. Like you said, Kyle, you know, start desiring to get there, not being content, a lack of contentment. And so I think that it's certainly a topic that we need to tread carefully on and be wise in how we talk about it, not to cast aspersions on the wealthy or the poor, because, you know, the Lord is the Lord of them both. But just to understand kind of what we're talking about when we say wealthy and the poor. So with that said, what are some things that let me go back. So is it fair to say that wealthy people have kind of gotten a raw deal, at least in the past couple of generations, from Christians who say, you know what, being wealthy is not, that's not very Christ-like. You shouldn't be wealthy in this world. Is that an accurate assessment or assumption to be made?
So I think my immediate answer is, of course, that's not a biblical assumption. And yet, you can see why, given the context of scripture, that attitude might easily be fostered. So here's what I mean by that. Of course, wealth in and of itself is not inherently sinful. I mean, we see even indications, you know, you think of the Old Testament, you think of whether it's Abraham, whether it's Job, you know, the wealth and the prosperity that they had were actually an outward sign of God's blessing them. Their wealth and their prosperity was a blessing given to them by God. You could not easily say that if wealth itself was inherently sinful. There's nothing in a New Testament ethic, so to speak, that would overturn that and suddenly make us think, you know, well, that was fine in the Old Testament, but now in the New Testament, you know, it's poverty is the virtue and poverty is the grace. I don't think that way of thinking is biblical. At the same time, there are particular warnings and cautions given that accompany wealth. That in one sense, you do not find the counterpart with poverty. There are, of course, you think of Proverbs chapter 30, verse 9. You know, Lord, give me what is good for me. Don't give me too much, because if you give me too much, I might be liable to curse your name. But don't give me too little, because if you give me too little, or I'm sorry, it's don't give me too much or I might forget you. Don't give me too little that I might curse your name. There are threats on both sides of that. But there are particular and very strong warnings given regarding wealth and prosperity. You can think of Matthew chapter 19. It is easier for a camel to enter the eye of the needle than the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. You do not hear a counterpart warning like that given to people in poverty. You think about the parable of the sower. Jesus tells us that it is the deceit of riches in part that comes and steals away the word of the kingdom. You don't have a counterpart warning given regarding poverty. Oh, it's the deceitfulness of poverty that steals people's hearts. You know, you think of the very serious warning that the Apostle Paul gives, as I've already mentioned in 1 Timothy chapter 6. And he says, those who desire to be rich fall into all kinds of temptations. You know, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. You don't always see those warnings with equal measure being given regarding poverty. The letter of James, his theology of economy is kind of interesting in that letter, and the way in which he speaks about wealth and riches, and the way that, at least by experience, we ordinarily witness things in this life, is that oftentimes prosperity and wealth is accompanied by a functional atheism. So that there are, so again, wealth is not inherently sinful, but I understand why people on a very superficial reading of the scriptures could say, oh, and it's because there are very true warnings given. That's how I would approach it.
Yeah, I think what Kyle's saying is really important, and just to kind of take it and run with it just a little bit more, I think often why there's warnings are there is so often that wealth is accumulated through injustice. So for instance, in James, there's a warnings because the rich men are taking advantage of the poor. They're not paying their workers the wages they should be given to them. Those kinds of things are taking place. There's also often in society just an automatic favoritism toward the wealthy. Again, you see that in James 2 being warned against, that when the rich man enters the assembly, you tell the poor guy, you just go sit over here while we fawn over the guy with the bucks that have entered into the church. And so I think there's this favoritism, this partiality, this injustice that so often accompanies wealth. And that's why there's so many strong warnings in scripture against it. However, as Kyle's saying, to be wealthy in and of itself, if God blesses someone with wealth, that in and of itself is not sinful. And even in the New Testament, we see, you know, it was a rich man that gave Jesus the tomb in which he was buried. And there's people in the New Testament scriptures that seem to be people of means and business people and rulers. And so there are wealthy Christians, and so it's not a sin to be a wealthy Christian. And often those who handle the scriptures in a wrong fashion can tend to see these warnings and then take them and push them beyond their bounds. So you get someone like the Canadian theologian Ron Sider, who just, I think he died last year. He wrote a book called Rich Christians in the Age of Hunger. And as you read through that, there's some things that you could perhaps understand why he's going at it the way he is, but he just really presses things too far. I mean, he's really looking at almost like at a, I guess for lack of a better word, a Christian communism. Like we're to feel guilty because of our wealth. And he offers ways of dealing with that issue in the West that I just think aren't biblical in nature. He takes away, you know, really you see the emphasis in scripture is an appeal for people to voluntarily take what they have and use it for the sake of the kingdom. Like you see in the book of Acts where people are, you know, they weren't being forced to sell their property in order to help the poor Christians in Jerusalem. They were gladly and voluntarily doing that. And so in scripture, you see this real strong emphasis on the fact that, again, God puts people in different economical situations. And in those situations, they need to respond in principled, godly, voluntary ways as they seek to honor the Lord in that situation.
Yeah. And so much of what Barry is saying, right, this is really born out of what you might call a Protestant ethic. Protestantism in our protests, right, we don't believe in vows of poverty. In fact, the Westminster Larger Catechism, as it discusses what are the commandments of God, you know, the eighth commandment, thou shall not steal. And I think the catechism rightly and biblically says, you know, what's required in the eighth commandment? And part of that answer is by all just and lawful means to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of others as well as our own. What a fascinating teaching. Our catechism, the Catechism of Presbyterian Churches, teaches this is a duty commanded by the eighth commandment to actually endeavor to procure and preserve our wealth and our outward estate, not just ours, but others as well. And that's very much born out of a Protestant ethic.
Right. And the danger, you know, you can swing that pendulum too far one way or too far the other. And I think what you've mentioned about the Protestant ethic, you know, the old way under Roman Catholicism was poverty is that's the true blessing, that's the true spirituality, that's the true Christian ethic. And unfortunately, I think with some of the health and wealth gospel that you see, you've seen that pendulum swing the other way, which is if you are truly honoring the Lord, you are going to be rich. And if you don't have wealth, if you're not wealthy, if you're not, you know, don't have all the greatest things, it's because there's something wrong with you spiritually. And I think both of them are very harmful to Christians and who are not solidly grounded in the scripture on this matter. So I guess with that being said, how do we handle I contemplating asking this, do you guys think you're wealthy? I'm not going to ask you that question, but you know,
I mean, that'd be interesting. I'd love to hear Barry's answer to that. I mean, as a president of seminary, you know, Barry, what is the salary you are? I'm kidding. I don't want to know.
But you know, I thought the same thing about a published, you know, I'm sitting here with two published authors. I mean, you guys have to have money coming out your ears, right? But nonetheless,
wow, Scott,
I don't think,
wow.
but in all honesty, I don't think any of us are in abject poverty, right? I mean, I think that would be fair to say. And yet I think all of our, you know, if you go by Paul's standard, if we have food, we have clothing, we have shelter, I think all of our needs are being met, right? But how do we talk to our children about this? How do we instruct them, educate them spiritually, economically, and you know, financially about wealth? And what do we tell them? What should we not tell them? How do you know? And this is almost getting into a parenting question, and it is. But how have you guys? Because you're both at kind of opposite ends of the spectrum on the parenting, you know, parenting. Kyle, you're getting ready to have your sixth child. Barry, you just married your sixth child off. So you're kind of at opposite ends. How do you deal with this these topics?
So are you referring to the fact that I just became quite poor in paying off the wedding? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, that's one way to look at
your dowries. I mean, what did you get paid? I mean,
how many goats did you get for Celia? Right.
Well, I was trying to give him 6 goats, but he wouldn't take them. So
nice. No. I think so, Scott. Let me just start by saying I think this is a super important topic to address with our kids. My son is 13 years old, and he just started a lawn mowing business this summer. And he's doing really well, like really well for a 13-year-old boy. And he's you know, he is working, and we love seeing that work ethic come out in him. He's also learning very quickly how fun it is to make money. Like it is fun. It's fun to see the numbers go up and to have money at your disposal. It's fun to sometimes have, you know, fun money to spend, things like that. And so I think, you know, our kids need from a very early age, they need to be directed by the scriptures as to how they think about money, how they use their money, and how they make their money. Maybe one of the best places, and I won't get into all the details, but I think the book of Proverbs just abounds with wisdom from a father to a son on this very issue. You start looking at the Proverbs and see all the wise instruction that is given. How do you fear the Lord with the management of money and in the making of money and things like that? That's a really good place to turn, just those wisdom principles together with the cautions of Scripture. And we've mentioned some of those. But, you know, our children need to know, even from an early age, that, you know, those who desire to be wealthy are going to fall into all kinds of temptations. And you really need to know biblically how to deal with temptation in general. You know, sometimes as parents, we're not always good at teaching our children, how do you walk through temptation in a way that glorifies God? That's applicable to money. It's applicable to all kinds of other things in their lives. And I think that that's part of discipling our children, shepherding them is how do you do that? But I'm going to yield more to Barry because I think he's going to have. I once heard, don't ever read a book about parenting from somebody who still has children under the roof. So, Barry, now that you're in this new state of life, I'd rather hear your opinions.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. I do think it's just so important to train our children in the use of money. And one of the first things that just comes to mind is even when they were young, before they could earn money, you know, we were always wanting them to just have the idea that the money that's given to us is from the Lord. Like every bit of it comes from God. And I couldn't earn money. I wouldn't have money unless God blessed and gave it to us. And so just them giving their offerings or tithes each week in church, as they started earning money, as they got older and started earning money, like Kyle's son, we very clearly taught them that to give a tithe and other offerings to the Lord, that's where the first and foremost thing is to be done is, and just acknowledging that this these resources come to them from the Lord. I thought it was important. Miriam and I would often talk about this. Let's just make them save it. But I always gave them a certain percentage. I wanted them to actually use their money and spend it on things because I wanted to teach them how to spend their money. And sometimes they would spend it on really dumb things that would break in a week, and they would learn a lesson through that. And other times they would save. I remember as a pastor, we would be going to these kind of conferences that Kyle was at. And if you're going to go to a conference, it's pretty expensive to take 4, 5, 6 kids to a conference. I always made my children work as they got old enough to do so, work and save up at least half of that in order to help pay for the cost of going to the conferences. And
did you hear that, kids? That's yeah. Way cooler than Barry. I didn't make you pay your way. Oh, I thought my microphone was muted. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And, you know, each family's got to have their own way of teaching these things, right? This is just an example. But I do think it's important to teach our children to recognize their money is from the Lord, how to spend it, how to save it, and how to use it for the benefit of others, to not have this individualistic, this is my money, but this is the Lord's money, and how can I use it for his kingdom?
You getting choked up?
I'm getting all choked up.
Barry's not getting choked up. He just lost his voice temporarily. So I think I think that last thing that Barry emphasized, I think is important. I'm just parroting him, so I'm not giving my own independent advice. But you see the way in which, especially in the use of resources. I remember a number of years ago, Tim Challies wrote a great blog post about it's okay to have fun with your money. And I loved it. But it is also right and good to share your money. Hmm. You know, you see that as the emphasis in Ephesians chapter 4. As Paul is talking about putting off the old man and putting on the new man, he then gets into these nitty gritty details. And he says, well, you know, the thief needs to stop stealing. That's his part of putting off the old man. Don't steal anymore. And then Paul says, but in putting on the new man, what does that look like? Well, don't steal anymore, but rather work hard so that you can have money and reach that to help those who are in need. Or you think of Paul's concluding exhortation to Timothy, again in 1 Timothy 6. He says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. So our kids, you know, and that's, I mean, it's a great practice. This is when you start giving to the church. And we've talked about that on previous episodes, but I think that's such a key point to be teaching our children. The Bible envisions the blessing of wealth and resources, not just for ourselves, but for others and for our neighbor as well.
Yeah. Scott, if I might just add one thing, you sure. know, being in a ministry where we rely so much on people's donations at the seminary, one of the greatest blessings of this job is when, you know, we'll have some kind of campaign going on or whatever, and these kids who've been praying for the seminary and praying for God to raise up pastors, and they save some money and give it to me at church, or, you know, we get this little cute picture and somebody sent in a small gift. It is a joy, not only, you know, as the scripture says, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And so for our children to learn that blessing of giving, I think it's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I can appreciate that.
Honestly thought Barry was going to say, as the president of the seminary, checks can be written out.
Yes.
Barry York. But Barry, that was much better than my anticipated thoughts of what you were going to say.
I wasn't sure where he's going, if he was going to use this as a platform to fundraise for the seminary. You know, you people with wealth, you need to be sharing. That would have been a great opportunity for you, Barry.
You guys just did it for me.
I know. we are really pushing the time here, but one of the things I do want to get to is, you know, in my life, as a young married couple, we struggled sometimes financially, and not to the point where we didn't have, but you know, things were tight from time to time, and especially when kids came along, and when we had young kids, and you know, we had twins, and so our expenses doubled overnight almost, or tripled almost, and so it wasn't always easy to we didn't always have the means, I guess, to do for our kids like we wanted to do. Or, you know, we couldn't afford the fancy groceries. You know, we'd have to buy off-brand stuff. And you know, no, kids, I can't buy you the expensive shoes this year. What is a principled way that we can use even those opportunities and those times in a person's life to train our children without putting a guilt trip on them? You know, some parents say, I don't have money. You think I'm made of money? Money doesn't grow on trees. You can't have anything. How do we handle that situation in life? I mean, we've talked about how to handle money, how we've done it, but how do you handle not having money? And how do you train your children in that way?
I think one of the keys is what Paul said in Philippians, is this, that secret of contentment, of knowing how to live with little or with an abundance. And that's not an easy secret to learn, and you have to practice it. I think a lot of times it is amazing how often this topic is always seen in relationship to other people. You know, my wealth is measured in how much I have in comparison to others and so forth. So is contentment, right? A lot of times our discontentment arises because we look and see someone else having something. And this is particularly, I mean, it's true for all of us, but children definitely have to learn how to not look at what another kid has in the church or in the neighborhood and automatically expect that they should have the exact same thing. And so I think it's teaching them, again, how everything we have comes from the Lord, and we have to really trust him with what he's put into our hands.
And that really, I mean, contentment is key, right? So I think just the spiritual grace of contentment, and one of the major ways that's applied is in this topic. But it is, you know, contentment is to define and characterize the whole of our lives. And I think with what Barry is saying, mom and dad need to demonstrate an attitude of contentment. Mm-hmm. If you're just biting back at your kids, we don't have money for that, and money doesn't grow on trees, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you're not actually even assuming a posture of contentment. You know, mm-hmm. you're even in that, there's a subtle grumbling and complaining that is mm-hmm. not teaching your kids. And here's where parents just have so much influence on their kids. You know what? So we're not going to get the name brand stuff, but look at this awesome shirt I get to buy you. You know, simple things like that, I think, is contagious to kids.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, mom and dad need to be leading with the attitude of contentment. And I think that, again, like I said, it becomes a little contagious for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, we are really pushing the time here. We've gone over our 30-minute allotment.
We apparently are not rich in time, huh, Scott?
I was going to make some joke about being content with ending it here, but I won't do that. Do you guys have any closing thoughts or you know, something that I would like to ask this question to jurors? You know, is there anything that you wish I would have asked, but I just didn't ask?
Oh, so my salary is posted in the minutes of synod, Scott, just because to make all things fair, like, what do you make a year?
You know what's really funny, Kyle? My salary is posted online as well.
I'm going to go
Google. It is public record.
But is it made? Is it confidential public record? Like,
no,
you can't make it confidential. Okay.
No, I could. I'm not going to tell you the website.
You know how many listeners now are going to be Googling your salary
scale? Yeah, Scott, bring us home.
But you know what? I didn't. I asked for the job. I didn't ask for the salary. And you know, I will. I'm just going to be honest. I make more than I probably should doing what I do. And I'll wear that honestly. I'm very blessed in that way. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to tell you the address, Kyle.
Oh, I already found it.
Did you really?
It's posted on openpayrolls.com. So
yes, it is.
But they still have you as deputy prosecutor. So I
yeah. So that was last year. That would have been my last year's pay. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, I can't even imagine as chief prosecutor what you're making now. I mean, look at this number.
I am a bit uncomfortable. We are going to end with that. We are not going to take this conversation any further. And Kyle, is your salary listed in the minutes of synod?
It will be.
All right. Well, I will be sure to look at that and make you feel just as uncomfortable next time we talk. We are glad that you joined us today.
Given your number, Scott, there's very little that could make me uncomfortable.
Well, you are making me like really like almost speechless here. I mean, more than please continue to send us your ideas for topics. Please disregard this last 3 minutes of the conversation of this episode. We are glad that you join us. We're glad that you join us regularly. We enjoy hearing from you, your ideas, your input. I'm a little bit flustered right now. But we do look forward to joining you next time on 3GTV.